You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts.
Episode 204 of Blue Jays Nation Radio is brought to you by Betano. The game starts now at betano.ca. Scrolling through the site, not only can you get the latest baseball odds, we got hockey playoffs coming up just around the corner and the Masters this weekend out at Augusta. They have it all covered over on Betano. The game starts now at betano.ca. Yaremchuk and Coomzee back with you. Coomzee was out in New York for that series against the Yankees. Yankees home opener as well. How was the Big Apple?
It was good. I love the Big Apple. It's a fun and exciting time. It's, I guess I was the good luck charm because I was at the home opener game, the Yankees home opener game, that is, and that's the one the Jays won 3-0. And then the next two I didn't go to. I thought, you know what, that's probably enough being a Blue Jays fan at Yankee Stadium for 1 year for me, so I'm not going to go to the next two, and they lost the next two. So 1-0 for me at Blue Jays games this season, 1-0 in New York, which we love to see. It's a fun ballpark. It's fun being a part of the whole experience. You take the subway, you get off in the Bronx, there's a huge crowd. You know, New Yorkers are a objectively funny group. Like, listening to them heckle each other, talk shit, talk about the other team, talk about their team, it's fun to blend into the background and just listen to all the stuff they say. So really good time. I do recommend attending a game at Yankee Stadium.
And you survived an earthquake.
I did. I survived the, I had no idea there was an earthquake. We were in the hotel that morning. It happened in the morning, I think 9:10 a.m. kind of thing. And the alarm went off in the hotel saying, it was completely incoherent. It didn't describe what happened, but they were like, there isn't an emergency, everything's fine. But the alarm kept on buzzing and we were like, what? Like, is there a fire? Do we have to leave or something? And then you texted me being like, there was an earthquake? Are you okay? And I was like, there was an earthquake? What? And I genuinely had no idea. So apparently that was a thing that happened. I did not realize they got earthquakes in New York/New Jersey. So that was a new thing for me.
Yeah, that was as soon as I saw it pop around, I'm like, oh my God, Coomzee's there. I wonder if he like felt his hotel room shaking. But there was a bunch.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
People who were like, yeah, I had no idea that it even happened. But in that series, you said it. You watched the first game, Jays win. They didn't get another victory after that. They walked out of that opening road trip, that 10-game trip at 4-6. On the last episode of the podcast, we were slapping a letter grade on it, myself and Zach Lang. I'll ask you that question. Coming out of that opening road trip with a 4-6 record, what grade would you give the Jays for their effort?
I think like we went into this being like, we're hoping for 5-5, 4-6. There was some ugly losses, so it seems a bit worse, like the ones in Houston, the no hitter, of course. And then the two losses in New York too, they were frustrating ones. So it's hard to feel really good about it. But if you take a step back, 4-6 ain't that much different than 5-5. It's not that bad. I'll give them a C+. There was things to like and there was things not to like, but that's a difficult grind to start the season. Like, you already just spent what, a month and a half down in Florida, living out of a suitcase doing that. And then you go straight to Tampa, straight to Houston, straight to New York. Those are good teams. Going 4-6 in this, the Jays certainly don't look like a World Series contender right now, but they also don't look bad. Those are good teams. And they were, for the most part, I guess, it was fine.
Yeah, and another part of it too is you dealt with a handful of injuries, right? There was no Danny Jansen. You were missing Romano and Swanson. Even having to bury Kevin Gausman at fourth in your starting rotation because of the injury meant he only started twice in those first 10 games. So, it wasn't great, but it definitely was far from a disaster. And we were all hoping that the Jays would return to a newly renovated Rogers Center with cup holders and padded seats, and it would give them a massive boost. And it feels like it kind of did. So let's get into our three up, three down for the series against the Seattle Mariners. The Jays go out, and actually, maybe even before we get into the three up, three down, they win the home opener, which is always a great vibe. They got some solid performances mixed in there as well. What did you make of the new look stadium? Obviously, you and I both just watching it on TV.
Yeah, last year I went to the home opener. They played Detroit, and it was all of the renovations they had made to the outfield, and it was really exciting stuff because it was more kind of bells and whistles for, I guess, every fan to sort of take part in. You walk into the outfield and you can stand there and watch, you know, pitchers warming up, or you can sit on those benches, and it really feels like you're part of an old school stadium. They had those things up in the 500, those bars, restaurant patio type things, so there was a lot of hype and excitement for that. And the way that the new Jumbotron looked in the outfield, there was a lot of excitement around last year's renos. I wasn't at the stadium this time, so I can't comment on what the vibes were like in person, but the vibes on social media about the new what they've done to the infield were surprisingly negative, because I thought on TV, yeah, it's different, but it looks good. Like it looks like more of a ballpark, right? It looks like, the reality is, the Rogers Center, the Sky Dome, it's in a great spot in Toronto. It's in a fantastic spot. The roof opening and doing that, it's great, but at the end of the day, this is, you know, like a concrete dome. It in a lot of parts, when you're sitting in that stadium or you're outside, you look at it and you're like, this is a huge parking garage or like a Costco or something like that. And to be able to turn it into something that feels like a baseball park, and it doesn't necessarily feel like you're, you know, in this dungeon that's meant to be like storing things or something, you know what I mean? That they could make the aesthetic different and make it feel more like a ballpark, I think, is positive. I also noticed it's very similar, to kind of what they did in Dunedin, like the backdrop right behind the batter. And I think they're trying to go for some consistency there. I can understand why some fans are pissed off about stuff like, oh, you know, the home plate lady's in a different spot. Like, all of this is for luxury seating that, you know, the average fan isn't going to get. And those who had season tickets had to either pay more or move something else. But this is kind of the reality of baseball. If the Blue Jays are going to be a huge budget team, then the Blue Jays are going to have to figure out ways to make Rogers a whole bunch of money. And though most people don't get excited about luxury seating and things of that sort, this is sort of a reality of modern baseball. The thing is a business, and they do have to make money. So I thought it looked good on TV. I'm not going to sit there and get all excited about luxury seats like we did last year for the restaurants and whatnot. But honestly, when you look at it on TV, I feel like it's a lot better. It doesn't, like, for years before that, this is clearly aesthetically one of the bottom few stadiums in baseball. It doesn't necessarily look like it's meant to be played baseball here. And now it does. It looks like a ballpark now.
And I think that's the biggest win in all of it, is it looks like a ballpark. The people complaining about how it looked on TV, there are ads everywhere. If we're going to start complaining now in 2024 about how many ads are present in a baseball game, you've missed the boat on that completely. It was just people who, I think, would have complained no matter what. They could have built the most beautiful ballpark in the world, and people be like, oh, it doesn't look that good on TV. It's fine. The only thing that I actually didn't like is, I'm worried, like at Leafs games, there's going to be like a platinum seat ghosts kind of issue here, where, you know, the beginning of every period for a Leafs game, there's no one in the lower bowl. And as the Jays finished off their win on the home opener, there was no one sitting behind home plate anymore. Everyone had gotten up and left. So that's the concern, I think. You know, I'm not going to sit here and cry foul because the tickets are too expensive, but I am going to feel a little bit disappointed if a bunch of times throughout the year we have a big Blue Jays game, and because it's luxury seats and people who are just going because, you know, it's a work thing or whatever, it's company tickets, they aren't actually like diehard Blue Jays fans. If at the end of all these games, behind home plate's 30% full and that's the shot we see, I'll be a little bit disheartened. That's the only downside to this whole thing.
Yeah, that's kind of the trouble they have in New York too. And when I was at the Yankees game, the Jays were starting to, when they scored those two runs in the ninth inning, the ones off of the wild pitches, you could see the people filing out of the infield area. And then, I mean, I wasn't watching it on TV, but I would imagine when you do look at it on TV, you know, there's nobody back there. And that's been a difficulty for the Yankees, is notoriously the first one, two, three innings of the game, while everyone's struggling to get off the subway and get through the crowd, it looks very empty. And the thing with that being a luxury spot is you can't, I don't think, because I wasn't at the game, so I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think you can do that thing, you know, when you get a ticket to the 500s and then you wait till the seventh inning and just come down. I think they're kind of handling that stuff a bit differently now, but that is what it is. Honestly, like I like the way it looks. I don't know functionally because I haven't been to a game yet, but on TV from my vantage point, I think it looks better. So overall, a slight net positive for me.
All right, well, let's get into the three up, three down and what happened on the field for the Blue Jays. And we'll start with probably the biggest up, and it's the starting pitching in that series. Jose Berríos was just excellent once again, and he's now turned in three very, very, very good starts for this Blue Jays team. Kikuchi was dialed in the finale. Chris Bassitt snapped out of his kind of early season funk with a really good start, and he was vintage Chris Bassitt. He was monotone and straight-faced as he worked his way through the lineup, and he threw 90 different pitches over the course of his six innings. So it was good, man, to see those three guys come through. I think, again, I gave Berríos a ton of love last week on the pod, but any talk that he was going to regress back to what he was 2 years ago, that's gone. It is very clear what the anomaly was in his Blue Jays career, and it was that down season. He's a legit high end number two, a guy who, when he's pitching this well, he's an ace.
Yeah, he's basically the backup ace. Like right now, yeah. Kevin Gausman, he didn't have a spring training. He's basically going through his spring training right now to an extent in the first few weeks of the season. It was good for the Blue Jays that he didn't have to spend any time on the injured list, but he's very obviously not at 100%. The velocity was well down in his last start. He was throwing in the high 80s. But Jose Berríos, he started the opening day game in Tampa, was excellent, pitched again well in his second game, and then in the home opener, he goes 6 2/3, doesn't allow a run, 4 hits, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. That's huge because, I mean, we talked about this before in the preseason episodes. One of the hardest Blue Jays to replace, if he's going to miss any time, is Kevin Gausman, because there were so many times last year when the momentum was really sliding negatively for the Blue Jays and Gausman came out and he gave a great start. And they have a handful of pitchers who can do this. I think all four of those veteran guys with Berríos, Bassitt, and Kikuchi, we saw it in this series. If all of them are pitching well, the Jays are really good. Between the three of them, it's 19 1/3 innings pitched, only 2 earned runs, 12 hits, 7 walks, and 23 strikeouts from your three starting pitchers. And I mean, getting that from those three, Berríos, Bassitt, and Kikuchi, when Gausman isn't, you know, at 100% is huge because, I mean, like I said, he didn't have a spring training, so it's going to take a minute for him to get up to speed. Maybe he does need some time on the injured list at some point this season. It's difficult to say. And then, of course, Alek Manoah, he's injured. We don't know when he's going to be back up. Bowden Francis had a great spring training, but it's been a little bit of a rough start for him. So getting those three pitchers, the veteran ones that are behind Gausman, the 2-3-4s, they're penciled in as the 2-3-4 on the team, but right now they're the 1-2-3, given Gausman's on 100%, and they're all capable of pitching at that level, and I think that's really encouraging for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, huge, and hopefully that can keep going for a little bit here as the offense looks to, we'll say, find a little bit of consistency. Speaking of the offense, our second up, a couple of Blue Jays big guns showing they got the clutch gene. Vlad and Bo both coming through in big moments. Vladdy had a really solid series opener. He smacked the double. He goes 2-for-4, drives in a run. And then in the series finale, he hit that clutch home run, and it was just a freaking moonshot, man. Like two of his three dingers now this year, he is absolutely murdered. He got on base in all three of the games, I believe, in that series. And then Bo Bichette hit a big home run. His first home run of the year comes in his 10th game of the season, a 2-run bomb. They were great in that series, and hopefully it's a sign that they were cold on the road. We talked about how that was a tough road trip for a bunch of reasons. Don't need to get back into that. Flatty and Bo maybe back at home now, back in Toronto. Hopefully they start to heat up, and this is a sign of things to come.
Yeah, this is what the Jays need, is they really need those guys in the middle of their lineup to do damage. I think you want those kind of, they've gotten some pretty decent contributions from some other guys, like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is off to a nice start this season. Justin Turner, who we're going to bring up right away, is also off to a really good start. I mean, there's some guys who aren't doing so well, but ultimately the key to the team whether the Jays are going to do well or not offensively this year comes down to what Bo and Vlad are doing in the 2 and 3 spots. And it's really encouraging to see Vladdy hit that moonshot in the third game, that game tying home run. Really encouraging to see Bo finally hit his first home run of the season in an important spot too. Runner on, puts them, adds their lead up from 1-0 to 3-0. It's so important for the Jays to have these two guys going. It's been a little bit of a slow start, which is somewhat disappointing because they were going so well in spring training. But like we said, like the season opening road trip's a huge grind. It's tough to do that right after spring training. It's basically, you know, 10 more games of extended spring training. That's tough. I think them having a series of games at home, you'll have Colorado coming up next. That's, you know, a pretty good opportunity, I think, to kind of get your bats going. And then there'll be another test right after that against the Yankees. It's really important for the Jays to get Bo and Vlad going, and seeing them come up with clutch hits, hits for power, which is so key, is an encouraging sign. Because again, I'll say it again, if these two aren't going, then the Jays offense isn't going to be going. This really is what it's all built around.
Yeah. Also, let's get to the third up. We spent a lot of time on this podcast talking a lot of shit about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and that signing. Justin Turner, we weren't particularly excited about. It is great to see those two get off to great starts with the Blue Jays, with the bats. Like, again, with IKF, if he would have been hitting, you know, average, slightly below average, but bringing it with the glove, you honestly could have sat here and been like, look, Matt Chapman replacement, below average with the bat, great with the glove. The fact that he's coming through and hitting the way he has over stretches, he drove one to the gap in that home opener as well and looked good. And Justin Turner's just been like, again, he's batting .342. All the numbers are off the page, but he's doing it consistently. It's not like it's just been like two unbelievable games from Turner have propped up an otherwise average start. He has been wildly consistent through 12 games. Both these guys are better than advertised so far.
Yeah, Turner's been really good. IKF's been better than expected. His defense looks great all over the diamond. Yeah, these are two signings that caught some negativity largely because of what the expectations were. Everybody was ready for Shohei Ohtani. We all told ourselves it was going to happen. And if it didn't happen, then instead of Ohtani, it was going to be a trade for Juan Soto or the signing of Cody Bellinger. And then since it wasn't those names, you look at Justin Turner, you see his age 39. You're like, oh no, this isn't going to work at all. But remember last year, Brandon Belt, they signed him to that 1 year show me contract after the surgery he had the previous year. And then, you know, no spring training, rough start in April. And then he was perhaps their best hitter for the entire season. And that's a guy on the, you know, in his late 30s. So there was kind of it was a bit of a surprise to see him do that well, but, you know, Justin Turner, kind of the same energy. And then Kiner-Falefa, I remember 2 years ago when the Jays acquired Whit Merrifield in that trade with Kansas City, a lot of us were like, what do you mean you acquired Whit Merrifield? Like, what's going on here? And he had a really good tenure as a Blue Jay for a year and a half. And I don't think Kiner-Falefa is necessarily going to bat .313 for the entirety of the season, but He's done what Whit Merrifield was doing for the Blue Jays when he was here, which is positional versatility, bring some speed on the bases. He puts the bat on the ball too, which I think is key. Like, you know, if you're a Blue Jays fan and you have been around for a while, you know that we really like to complain about right-handed hitters striking out against right-handed pitchers. It's a lot of, you know, swinging through sliders, swinging through high fastballs, that sort of thing from the righties. So having a guy like IKF who makes quite a bit of contact, puts the ball in play, and when he is on the bases can move around, that's a positive. And I mean, these are two signings that people didn't like largely just because of the expectations of who else it could have been. But if you just kind of look at them in a vacuum, you don't think about the money, don't think about the context. They're both solid players. They're solid players who do a lot of things really well, especially in the case of Justin Turner. This is somebody who has pretty much spent his entire career on good teams with the LA Dodgers, coming up big for them in important situations, playing in the playoffs. Like, that's what the Jays need. That's what they really lacked last year, is players who can come up clutch, players who can have these good at-bats. And so far, through a handful of games, the first four series of the year, both of their additions on the position player side look really quite good.
Yeah, off to a good start. And again, it is only April. And last year at this point, what were we talking about? We were Matt Chapman could get $300 MVP. Million MVP. Brandon Belt, we wanted him DFA'd. I remember saying that on a podcast. I'll wear that. He ended up hitting north of 20 bombs. So lots of baseball left to be played this year. But again, an encouraging start is an encouraging start. And it's much better than if Turner was batting .142 and IKF had only played in three games because his bat's so unreliable. Like, you know, this is positive. This is positive stuff. We're on the three ups. They won the series against the Mariners. They're almost back to 500 on the season. That is all good. Let's go to our three down, though, because there were a couple of negatives from this one. And probably the biggest one is not being able to complete the sweep when it was right there. You have the bases loaded in the ninth inning. Ernie Clement hits one off the end of the bat. Polanco makes a great play kind of over his shoulder into shallow right field. But they had a real good opportunity there coming off that Yusei Kikuchi start where he goes six innings, strikes out nine, only gives up the one run. They get good relief appearances to get them into the 10th inning. They needed to end that thing in the eighth or ninth inning. There's no reason. Again, I know Gilbert was good, had a good start, all of that stuff, but you needed to find a way to score more than one run in that game, especially considering the fact you had six opportunities with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, two different chances in the eighth inning. It was Logan Gilbert got the first two out, strikeout and ground out, and then Varsho hit that two out single. Springer drew the walk. That was a really good at bat. And then they brought in the reliever Munoz, and Vladdy came up, two guys on, flies out. And then in the bottom of the ninth, they got the bases loaded, and Ernie Clement, like you said, pop fly. That was a frustrating at bat because Munoz did not have as good control. I think he had hit a batter, hit Biggio, he walked another guy. He didn't really have his best command, and they were talking about it on the broadcast over the weekend. Seattle was playing, I think, Milwaukee. It was Logan Gilbert's previous start before that. Munoz came in and command problems. They wound up losing the game. The Clement at bat was a bit frustrating because, yeah, you're going up against a pitcher who's having command problems, and you're, you know, swinging at the first pitch, swinging through the second one, not really ideal. Yeah, it was unfortunate they didn't get the big hit, but I think the thing about the third game that was probably the most worrying was the fact that, you know, Tim Mesa came in and Cal Raleigh hit an absolute nuke off of him, and then after that it was two walks. By that point, you're kind of just into mop-up duty. Mitch White comes in, allows four runners to score. It just turned into a complete meltdown. The worry here isn't so much Mitch White, who's kind of, you know, that I guess, swing guy, the guy to pitch in these sorts of situations, but that Tim Mesa is kind of off to this start is a little worrying because he was so good last year and so effective as Toronto's number one lefty, and then their number two lefty too, Genesis Cabrera, hasn't had the best start to the season. So you're kind of a little bit worried, are either of our two lefties going to be effective? John Schneider said after the series that things aren't 100% with Mesa right now in regards to his pitches. He doesn't have his perfect stuff right now, but they do believe, you know, as time goes along, they'll work through the problems. I do have faith they'll be fine, but a little bit worrying early in the season to see kind of, I guess, two key bullpen arms struggling like that. But to be fair, there are a few injuries back there, so the relievers are being asked to, I guess, take on more than they probably usually would.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. The second down we have, it's the Davis Schneider conversation that just isn't going away. And Zach and I talked about this last week. I feel like we're going to be talking about this all year. When he's in the lineup, they win. When he's not in the lineup, they lose. Again, relatively short sample size here. It's only been 13 games this season, but if they start Davis Schneider, they're getting good results. And I know we can sit here and talk about the way he hits the fastball, the way he hits lefties and righties, all of that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is he comes through for this team. And I think he's done enough to earn and be one of the everyday Toronto Blue Jays and not a guy who needs to be in this platoon role. Do you think we maybe need to give the Jays and their process a bit more of a sample size, because there is a chance they could lose the next five with David Schneider in the lineup? Do we need to give them this sample size here, or is it time for John Schneider to start playing David Schneider as a regular?
Yeah, I think I'm half and half on this one, because I understand the approach that they have, and I understand that platoon splits are a little bit more complicated these days than lefty and righty. It's more about, you know, how well do you hit the certain kind of pitches that pitcher is going to throw? Are you the kind of guy that hits a slider well? Are you the kind of guy that hits high heat well? You're going to try and match guys up on some more things like that. But if you do go into the lefty-righty thing, which largely has been the thing with Schneider, I think most of his starts this season are coming against left-handed pitchers. His big home run, Josh Hader, of course, that was off a lefty. But if you look at his split since coming up to the big leagues, it's not like he's bad against righties. He's got a 247 batting average and an 813 OPS with a couple of dingers, nine doubles against right-handed pitching in his career in the majors. So I've always been an advocate of, if a guy is hitting well, find a way to get that guy in the lineup. And through the first handful of games in the season, David Schneider's been one of the most clutch Blue Jays. He, in the home opener, of course, had that big hit. I think the bases were loaded with that one, and then there was the big home run off of Josh Hader in Houston that I just mentioned. He keeps coming through for the team, and I mean, nobody expects him to be, you know, August 2023 David Schneider forever, but he's one of the guys on this team that when he comes up late in the game, he hits for power. He hits a double, hits a home run. Those are game-changing hits. I think that, especially given the way that two of the other outfielders are playing right now, Kevin Kiermaier and Dalton Varsho have combined for, it was 9-for-69 thus far with only one extra base hit. Like, that's not ideal. I think maybe you obviously want to get them in the lineup so they turn it around, but I think that you want to have David Schneider in left field, regardless whether it's a lefty or a righty, just because he keeps coming up clutch. And I just think you're never going to figure out if he's, you know, an everyday player, if he's a guy that can hit the high fastball, a guy that can hit righties, if he's sitting on the bench, only occasionally playing in those situations. He's had such a good start to his big league career. He had such good results down in AAA Buffalo. Just play the guy. It's not like the Blue Jays are overflowing with guys that are hitting really well. I think you just have to kind of find a way to get him in the lineup and have a run where he's playing every day. I think that's what everybody wants to see.
Yeah, I think maybe another wrinkle to this, like, they obviously want to let Varsho and Kiermaier try hit out of their slumps, and I'm a Varsho believer, but that is starting to dwindle as the days go on here. But again, just how important he could be, I'll keep pushing for that. But maybe it would be easier to just keep throwing Schneider at second base. But Kevin Biggio is also playing some pretty good baseball. Defensively, he's been solid. With the bat, he's been pretty good. So that is another wrinkle, that you can't just throw Schneider at second to let the guys in the outfield hit out of their slumps, because you also kind of want to keep Kevin Biggio playing right now.
Yeah, and the other thing too, we just got finished talking about Kiner Falefa, and that's another guy they'd like to have in the lineup as well. So it's not like you can just, you know, make sure that you can stash Schneider at third base and bench IKF. It's reasonable. Like, you're early in the season and you want to get everybody in the mix and get them going. I think we'd all like to see David Schneider more. We want to see him play every day, but that is a bit of an oversimplified way of looking at things. The Jays are built as a team that, you know, you have a handful of guys that play in different spots. They have their strengths. They're a new school team. It sort of is what it is. A lot of old school people want to see, you know, the Cito Gaston style way of managing, which was same lineup every day, no matter what. These are the guys, like, we're paying you to hit. That's what you do. And it's a different game now. And the players play in the spots that they're expected to do well in. I know a lot of people don't love it, but these are the decisions that, you know, the LA Dodgers operate this way. This is how the Houston Astros operate. This is just what teams do now. The Tampa Bay Rays, we've seen it so much. This is sort of just who the Blue Jays are, and I don't really think it's changing anytime soon.
Going a little long today on the pods, let's jump to our third down. What did you make? John Schneider gets booed coming out in the home opener. Guillermo Martinez gets booed coming out in the home opener. I think there were some scattered boos for, like, Don Mattingly. It was like, what the hell? A lot of negativity, which I understand the frustration, but there also is kind of a part of me that's like, really? You paid to go to the home opener to boo the manager? Like, come on.
Yeah, it seems like some misplaced angst to me. Like, I don't know. If you want to sit there and tell me that John Schneider is a mediocre manager, then that's fine. Like, but I also just don't think that the decisions made by the manager necessarily are the reason why the Blue Jays are, you know, a 5-6 sort of underwhelming team. You know, the fans were booing when he came to take Barrios out of the game, but he was pitching into the seventh inning. This isn't like it was the wild card game where he was being pulled his first time around. And, you know, even with the angst with the wild card series, the Jays only scored, what was it, one or two runs in that series? It doesn't really matter what Schneider did with the pitchers because nobody was hitting. I think this is just, it's a misplaced angst. The Jays aren't as good as people thought they were going to be or they should be. And I think it's kind of a hockey fan thing to, you know, blame the coach, because we've seen this many times in hockey. Like, there is absolutely noticeably a bump that you get when you fire the coach. Like, look at Vancouver in the past, Vancouver Canucks in the past 2 years. Bruce Boudreau came in, they got a huge bump, and then it crashed. Rick Tocchet, an even bigger jump. Look at the Oilers this season. You know, when they hired Jay Woodcroft the first time around, huge bump. Fire him this year, bring in Chris Knobloch, huge bump. It's definitely a thing in hockey, but I don't think it's the same thing in baseball. I don't think just having a manager that's rah-rah and can just like shout at the guys and get them fired up and they're going to squeeze the bat tighter and do better. It's not the same. I think the Blue Jays need some familiarity. There's been a handful of changes over the years. You know, you went from Gibby, who was there, and he kind of felt like a bit of a lame duck there at the end of his tenure in Toronto. And then you go to Charlie Montoyo, probably got fired sooner than most people expected. I think having the same staff for a few years will be helpful. I don't think firing another manager and bringing in, like, what are they going to do? Like, are they going to fire the whole staff and bring in somebody new, like a veteran, yes, Dusty Baker type, Bruce Bochy type, or like, it's not going to happen. If they fire Schneider, then Don Mattingly is probably going to be the manager. It's not going to be very different. So I don't know. To me, this just feels like hockey fans still in hockey mode that probably want Sheldon Keefe fired, just putting this on to John Schneider. I think it's misplaced angst personally.
It is the low-hanging fruit of being a sports fan. Oh, your team isn't as good as you want them to be. I'm going to yell about how they should make a coaching change. Speaking of John Schneider, quickly, his beef with Cal Raleigh. I hate Cal Raleigh because he is an average MLB hitter, some would say below average MLB hitter, who beats the ever-loving Christ out of the Toronto Blue Jays. He is prime Barry Bonds when he steps into the Rogers Center. He was asked about comments Schneider made back in 2023 after Raleigh hit those two home runs in the series. Schneider said, quote, "He's not very tough to pitch to when you execute your pitches." My take on that is he's actually right, but also maybe just shut the hell up after a guy beats you in a playoff series. Raleigh responded with, he didn't have much to say. He pointed out a lot of people around the league have beef with Schneider. Seems like Schneider's maybe not that much of a liked manager outside of Toronto. Also, as we just discussed, inside of Toronto. But what did you make of this whole kind of discourse?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I completely forgot that John Schneider made those comments last April. And it's very bizarre because Cal Raleigh was great in that playoff series against the Jays. He hit the home run off of Alec Manoah in the first game. And then in that comeback game where the Jays blew, there was the 8-1 lead. He had three hits in that one. And then the following April, when Seattle comes to Toronto for the first time since that playoff series, he hits multiple home runs in that one too. And I mean, I guess if you look at Cal Raleigh's numbers as a rookie in 2021, he put up a 180 batting average and a 532 OPS. But since then, he's been quite good. Yeah, he's a low batting average guy, but he's got huge slugging numbers. He hit 27 home runs in 2022, 30 last year, and got MVP votes. I don't think this is the kind of guy where you sit and say, ah, you know what? If you just pitch properly, he's going to strike out. I don't think it's that simple. He's a pretty good hitter that can hit bombs. Yeah, I'm not going to contradict myself and go and flip immediately to crapping on John Schneider, because if you listen to the full quote, he kind of goes and sort of corrects himself a little bit and talks about, oh yeah, Raleigh's got power, he can do this and that. And it's not so much, when you look at the quote on text, it looks like an insult, but it wasn't really that. I just think the Blue Jays always do this. It's everyone on the team. It's Alec Manoah with pressure goes in my tires or whatever. Vladdy, this is my house. John Schneider says this about Cal Raleigh. You're giving the other team bulletin board material. Like, everyone on the Mariners now can look at that comment and be like, oh, they think we're easy to pitch to. And just like that little bit of extra energy can just be the thing that, you know, powers you to a win like this. If you're Cal Raleigh, you know, I just got through finish saying that you're not going to, you know, grip the bat a little harder and do better if someone yells at you. That's not really what happens. But if the other team's giving you motivation and they're finding a way to piss you off and get in your head like that, I don't think it helps. Like, I think if the Blue Jays have learned anything from the past few years is that these quotes, these things that they say, the bulletin board material, it's got to stop. Just give the generic answers, you know, say the easy thing. Stop doing things to piss the other team off. This has got to come to an end.
Or you better just be damn sure you can back it up. Like, again, We had moments with those Jays teams in 2015 and stuff like that. You know, this isn't the tri-league and all of that. And it's like, yeah, when guys like Donaldson and Batista went and, for lack of a better phrase, ran their mouths a little bit, they went on the field and balled out. And if you're going to sit there and talk a copious amount of shit, or, I mean, again, like Vladdy, he did the shush thing at Yankee Stadium. I didn't have a huge problem with it. But like, if you're going to be someone who carries yourself in that kind of way, be ready to go out and back it up a little bit. And it's just a bad look if you're Schneider and you're going to talk shit about a guy. You better be damn sure your pitchers are going to come through for you against that guy, and it's not going to blow up in your face. So anyways, I thought that was fun to see. And the interesting comment for me really is he's had a lot of beef with people in the league, and he kind of did it to himself. Yeah, he kind of did. Some injury updates for you. We were talking about, speaking of bats that are kind of cold, Alejandro Kirk's had a bit of a weird year. Getting Danny Jansen back would be a massive boost for this team. I think he's without a doubt the 1A and the 1A, 1B split behind the plate. He had a grand slam in his rehab start on Wednesday. Sounds like he could be back up sooner rather than later, maybe even by weekend, early next week.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Scott Mitchell from TSN had an update saying that Danny Jansen expects to be back before the end of April, and he started already in Buffalo, hit that grand slam. You'd think they probably maybe give him the series on the weekend, and maybe he's up next week. Like you said, that'd be really ideal, because the catching tandem just hasn't provided any offense yet. Brian Serban, the third string catcher, he had a great spring training, but unfortunately that hasn't really carried over. He's only had 5 at bats, doesn't have a hit yet. But Alejandro Kirk, of course, has taken on a huge load here, doing a lot of catching. He's got a 146 batting average and a 364 OPS. He's grounded into 4 double plays. I mean, at the end of the day, like, when you're in a situation like this where it's catcher plus third string and the one catcher's, you know, catching pretty much every day, the thing you ultimately care about is their defense. And I think Kirk, he's one of the better defensive catchers in baseball, one of the better game callers too. So at least you're getting that. But The Jays need some more pop from the bottom of their lineup. And Danny Jansen last year, he only played in like 80, 85 games and hit, I think it was 16 or 17 or 18 bombs. It was a good season offensively for Jansen. The key is he's got to stay healthy for the whole year. They really need that pop in the bottom of the lineup. And hopefully when he comes back, he's all good. And hopefully he doesn't get hit again in the hands. It seems like he's got that weird magnet for always getting hit. And hopefully it doesn't happen again. Like, hopefully when he comes back, it's all good and he just stops getting hit by pitches.
It's really weird. Like, every injury he basically goes through is a hand or wrist or something injury. It's odd. Romano, Swanson, they're both set to pitch for the Bisons this upcoming week. I think tonight as well on April. And then Alek Manoah is going to actually get a AAA start on Sunday. So even though the start down in Dunedin didn't go well, the Jays are moving Manoah up. I think that might be a little bit of a product of Bowden Francis not being quite what they expected coming out of the gates here early on. But I mean, with Manoah, I'm done guessing. I don't know what we're going to get. I'm probably done being optimistic as well. It's very much it is a massive roll of the dice. If he comes through, he comes through. If he turns it around, that feels like it'll be a low-key miracle at this point. So yeah, I don't know what to expect with Manoah. The other two guys, very big. Their bullpen needs the help. Manoah, I don't know.
Yeah, the Romano and Swanson thing, I think Chad Green and Jimmy Garcia have done a good job being in the eighth and ninth innings, but you obviously don't want to go through a tremendous amount of time. You'd rather have those guys be, you know, middle of the innings relievers type thing. You want your closer and eighth inning guy in the mix. They've done a pretty good job of navigating it, but you know, they've actually got some pretty good pitching performances from guys like Nate Pearson, for example. 5 1/3 innings, hasn't allowed an earned run yet. They're having struggles with guys like both the lefties, like I mentioned earlier. Tim Mesa and Genesis Cabrera have struggled thus far, so that's kind of the worrying thing. It's an interesting conversation is who's going to go down when both these guys come back, because Mitch White has been okay, but he doesn't have any options. And then of course the two lefties, both of them can be optioned. And then Nate Pearson, like I just mentioned, he also has options, but has been really good. So you wonder if maybe like the obvious one would be Paolo Espinal and Nate Pearson go down to make room. But both of those two guys have been getting outs when they come into games. So maybe one of those two lefties goes down. Maybe it's Genesis Cabrera spends a week or two in Buffalo to get something figured out. I can't imagine it being Tim Mesa going down. I'd be pretty surprised if that happened, but I don't know. I don't think it's that easy to send Nate Pearson down right now. I think this is the walks are still a bit of a concern, but striking guys out, throwing hard, looks more confident than usual. He actually looks like a big league reliever now, and that's positive. I don't know if you necessarily want to take him out of this situation and send him down to Buffalo when these have been the results.
Well, also, we know how big of a role confidence plays in Nate Pearson's game. If this is really one of the first times in his career where he's going, whoa, I feel like I have a job, I have a role, and I'm doing it well, do you really want to sit him down? And I know he's lost the prospect shine and all of that stuff, and the days of hoping for him to one day be a high-end starter, they're gone. But at the same time, he can turn into a productive piece of your lineup for you in that bullpen. I don't think I want to mess with his confidence right now. I think Genesis Cabrera is the obvious one. If you want to let Mesa work through his problems, I think he's shown you enough upside over the last 18 months that you can let him do that. I think it's Cabrera, and it's probably Paulo Espino as well. Let's keep cruising along here. And out of the injury updates, talk about what's coming up next. The Jays are going to host a Rockies team that has been, I mean, weirdly up and down, I guess. They picked up a couple of interesting wins earlier in the year, but they're largely a junk ball team. They're 1-6 away from Coors Field, 2-4 at home this year. They're 1-5 against teams above 500. They've gotten blown out. They've struggled to keep runs off the board. Like, I'm just looking, they gave up 12 runs to the Cubs earlier this year. Like, they've gotten close. They gave up 16 to the Diamondbacks in one of their first games of the year. Like, when it gets ugly for Colorado, it gets really ugly, is my point. This is a series the Jays should roll into and not really have a lot of problems considering they're playing at home.
Yeah, you should sweep this series. Colorado's only won three games so far. They played four in Arizona to kick things off. They picked up one win. They went to Chicago, got swept by the Cubs in three. They played three at home against Tampa, with the only win being their home opener. And then they just had a three-game set against Arizona where they only won the one game. So, I mean, the weird thing is, though, when you look at I wrote down their starters' ERAs. It'll be Gausman going up against Ryan Feltner, who has a 3.27 ERA. Bowden Francis against Dakota Hudson, who has a 2.38 ERA, and you're like, these don't look like Colorado Rockies ERAs to me. And then you get to the final game, which is Jose Berríos versus Kyle Freeland, who through three starts has a 16.03 ERA. So that's more kind of what you'd expect from a Colorado Rockies pitcher at this point. I mean, honestly, yeah, like I said, this really should be a sweep for the Jays. If you're a playoff team, a team that has aspirations to get there in October and do some damage, yeah, you definitely have to beat the good teams. You got to beat the Houstons, the Tampas, Baltimore, New York, but you've also got to beat the crap out of these teams too. Like, it just makes your life so much easier that, all right, we had a 10-game road trip to start the season against three contenders, and then you get Seattle, who's also a solid, you know, a middle of the pack, maybe a playoff team, a challenge. But when you get through all those games and you get to a series against Colorado, especially considering New York's coming up again right away, you've really got to take care of business. And I mean, honestly, only coming two out of three in this series, it wouldn't be that big of a win. I think you're coming into this one against Colorado being like, the sweep is what we're looking for here.
7 o'clock Friday night, 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon, and then they wrap it up at 1:30 on Sunday. If you're wondering how Kyle Freeland's ERA got that terrible, he gave up 10 earned runs over 2 1/3 in his first start against the Diamondbacks. He gave up 7 earned runs over 3 1/3 in his second start against the Cubbies. And then he did kind of have a respectable start in his third one out. So maybe he's starting to piece it together. Let's hope that's not the case. It's been 10 years since he was picked in the top 10 of the draft as well. That is crazy. That is a wrap on this episode of the pod, episode 204, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now at betano.ca. The Jays are the only team in the AL East under 500. Coombsy, will they be above 500 by the time we next chat?
If they are not, then it's going to be a very negative episode of BJN Radio next time around. The Jays should be coming out of this series. They should be 9-7.
They absolutely should be. Enjoy the baseball this weekend. 13 games down, 149 to go. Oh. Enjoy the weekend series, Coombsy.
Best wishes.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.